thanks for joining this call. This episode is basically to check back in with each other as community organizers for Restoring the Circle and to talk more about affirmative practices and experiences surrounding gender diverse youth in education. I think that I want to re-highlight how our voices have been a part of Restoring the Circle. I think that for me, I was able to really further pursue different explorations or applications of my own insights and lived experiences in ways that were meaningful or new or informative. My process working with this project as an artist and as a young non-binary community organizer has been really enriched with different experiences within different stages of this project, and they have kind of allowed me to push myself more to reflect. Initially, when I was invited into this community, I thought that being able to execute my roles, such as being an artist, a podcast producer, a moderator, educator, and young trans person, or what have you, would be easy to deliver without having to allow myself to be in a vulnerable or trusting or a retrospective position. For me, I knew and I know that my lived experiences and insights are valuable. However, I believe that perhaps there were times for me when I was unsure of how to apply my lived experiences into words or conversation or action or education. And I think that this is something I want us all to be able to reflect upon so that we can ask ourselves how things have been changing within our own participations or our own narratives, our own teachings, and our collaborations. Bringing you all here today, I want to talk about these kind of questions. And I think that before answering some of these questions, if you want to share anything about yourself and how you came to be part of Restoring the Circle, that could be a way to start. And then how has it been important for your voice to be part of Restoring the Circle? And what have your processes been throughout this project? What are some of your initial thoughts and reflections? Yeah, so who would like to go first?
I can go first. So my name is Keegan Prempe. My pronouns are Zezer or they, them. I originally got involved with this project when a friend of mine connected me to Julie. And so for me, as somebody who is a non-binary young person of color, it's really meaningful to participate in this kind of work and have these kinds of conversations and facilitate different learning environments, especially because, you know, growing up, I never thought that I would ever be in a position where I was able to do this. I never thought that I would have the confidence or self-awareness to be able to share my perspectives, especially as somebody who, you know, so often exists outside of like systems of power or experiences a lot of different types of oppression and like the cancellation or erasure of like voices like mine. And so, yeah, that's been really special. And I think especially as I, you know, I'm a young professional now, have an undergraduate degree in social work, and, you know, my perspective on how systems of care like education, healthcare, and social services function is, you know, so, it's just evolved like just so much. And I recognize all the limitations and barriers that exist within these institutions and how professionals like myself and others, you know, can facilitate a lot of harm within these places. And, you know, my goal or my hope is that as I continue to share my perspectives and, you know, kind of talk about what I've learned and things I've perceived, that I can be part of a change that makes it so that these experiences of harm are lessened, and so that there are more positive experiences where people feel affirmed and taken care of rather than erased or neglected. Yeah, so that's me.
Thanks, Keegan. I will go next. My name is Pri. My pronouns are they, them. I found my way into this project by attending a conference hosted by MHCC in Ottawa. where I met Keegan, and I think Kaden as well, at the same conference. And Lynette later connected me to Julie when this project was in the works, and I got to be a part of Restoring the Circle. I think something that has kind of been magical about this process for me is that a lot of this work was kind of remote, and then we met the day of the original conference, and everything was very harmonious, and I think that we all just supported and amplified each other's perspectives really well, and that was really special to me. And I think that being a part of Restoring the Circle has resulted in me building like another community, which is really special to me. And yeah, I guess a little bit about me is that I'm a community organizer. I'm a community artist. Throughout the pandemic, I've been maintaining my arts practice, and that's kind of been my primary focus. But I'm really excited to be on this research project again. And I think something I also want to point out is that being a part of this project has led to other opportunities that have helped sustain like my existence and my survival. And I want to just say thank you to Julie for like putting in the work of always making sure that us young trans leaders are paid and getting paid for our work and getting paid for what we're worth. And yeah, that's really important to me coming out of academia, where you're expected to do a lot of work for free. And so, yeah, I finished my master's in 2016, and I was supposed to start my PhD a couple of years ago, but I withdrew right before for personal reasons. And since then, I've been facilitating creative workshops or been on panels related to trans healthcare. And I think that just being a part of this process has been, you know, like a big stepping stone for me in terms of being able to have a voice for folks like myself. And kind of like Keegan, as someone who is a visibly racialized person that has been oppressed in a lot of different systems of power, and someone who's chronically ill. And when we started this process, my disabilities were relatively invisible, but I use a mobility device now. And yeah, just thinking about all those different facets of myself, I think it's really special to be able to kind of speak up for myself and my experiences, but also for those who have experiences like mine and then others who don't. Like, I'm of Punjabi diaspora, but I think it's really important for us to hold space and amplify the voices of Black and Indigenous and Two-Spirit folks as well. And that's really important to the work that I do.
Great. Thanks.
So this is Julie James, she, her, and I am a cisgendered white fairly new prof. And I wanted to jump in because, you know, I got involved with this because I, you know, switched from doing direct work with young people to being an academic. And the only way that I could really get motivated is try to understand how I could broker my privilege and resources in ways that hopefully do good. And then I got to meet and work with all of you, which has been an incredible gift to me. And I have really valued each of you more than you probably kind of know, and really thought highly of how you all operate in this world. And so it's been a gift to me. And I want to open things up because in this process, like right before the conference was about to take place, my partner was put in the hospital and I had to pull out of things. And I understand that break caused a disruption. And so there's that. And so it's okay to be honest about that. And also, I want to really be honest and understand the good things for sure and the concrete things that happened. And I'm really happy that those things happened. I think maybe those things happened almost in some ways because of being able to speak to service providers and those different experiences, but I think in a lot of ways because of your connections with each other. And I also just want to open up for, you know, to be honest about the things that weren't good. Obviously, my intentions are different, but I just want to have a genuine understanding of how to do this work in good ways, especially as we move forward and as we continue the work, right? So I just want to open those things up and to like let you know it's totally okay to say this didn't go well, this didn't go well, or whatever, as well as concretely this was good, that you're definitely not going to offend me. So anyhow.
So maybe Alex, RJ, or Kaden might want to go next.
I can go next. So my name's Kaden Seaburn, and I use they or he pronouns. I'm a non-binary, trans masculine, white community organizer from Ottawa, and I'm doing my Bachelor of Social Work at Carleton right now. And I met Julie almost like 4 or 5 years ago now, I think, at an event in Ottawa, and we kind of like worked together a little bit over a couple of years, and so I was able to get involved in this project when Julie had the idea to organize the conference and the other projects that we've been working on together. I've done a lot of different types of kind of community organizing and education work in different like sectors or different capacities over a few years. And I think this project was really cool as a way to be able to connect with other people who were doing that work, both folks that I already knew from this area, but also folks from other places around Ontario and around Canada, who, like all of you folks and other people who were involved in the conference who are already doing similar work, and be able to make those connections and have those conversations, I think was really, really awesome. And also, I think the way that the conference was able to amplify that work in terms of bringing in so many like other people who are working in health and social services and education to be able to come to the conference and attend those workshops, I think it was really cool to be able to have such like a large group of people. And I've been obviously to like other types of conferences before, but I think having it be organized by us and being often I find that large conferences like that, where there would be that kind of reach and like a large number of people who are there who are attending workshops or having those conversations, tend to not feel like they're as much run by the community or like there's as productive conversations that are happening. So I think being able to kind of organize that ourselves and have so much control over what that looked like was really awesome.
Hey, my name is RJ Jones. I am Soto Cree, originally from Regina, Saskatchewan, but I'm currently living on Algonquin Territory in Ottawa. I use they and he pronouns, and I'm a two-spirit, non-binary, and queer multimedia artist, educator, and full-spectrum doula. Initially, of course, like most of us, I also got involved in this project through Julie. A lot of the reasons that I became interested was I have a general and strong belief around looking away from shame-based approaches within education to get folks to a point in understanding, I guess, some topics around gender and sexuality. So that's initially what piqued my interest. And I think like generally in these conferences, we'll run into folks who are already at that point in time where they feel they're ready to kind of learn and challenge their views a bit. And that's something I'm always been passionate about and something I do in my day-to-day work as well. So really it was just, I find I have like a lot of capacity in that area of education. And I think as someone who's like an older non-binary person now, like approaching my 30s, I think it's important to give back to communities that give back to me. So always creating those spaces to work with like younger folks and also like give people resources that I didn't necessarily have when I was younger. And that's always been important, but as well as to like always increase visibility of other like Indigenous, like LGBTQ folks. It's always been my priority.
I'm Alex Rivers. I actually use they, them pronouns. I am a youth leader, disabled, queer, person of color, multiple mental illnesses. And how I came to be at this specific event was I actually registered with Julie like right before the event. And I ended up having the courage to ask Julie if I could join the panelists. And through this event, I have been able to expand on my community work, and I was able to have a lot more support from the community. I met Danny from the 519, and it was really awesome to meet another Chilean, which was something I don't get to do often. And through that, she invited me to do panels at other workshops and discussions. She also invited me to the Trans Youth Mentorship Program. And through all of that, I gained a more sense of community. From there, I even got invited to speak at York for the Trans Day of Remembrance as well. This kind of springboarded all of the stuff that I've been wanting to do for so long to actually being able to do it. I actually really enjoyed this process as a whole because I actually learned a lot about myself and how I want to help the community in more ways. One of my biggest things is I want to be a voice for people who don't tend to have that voice. And from somebody who's disabled at a younger age, you know, I get to have different views and I get to show said views and reflect them in these types of projects, which is really awesome for me. Because, you know, we don't get too many voices at that one. Actually, also, through this program, I was also able to actually apply to be a youth mentor for newcomers, at-risk youth, and other youth who need our help. And I thought that was awesome too, because I actually started to do all these things to help my community. After all this time I've wanted to, I just finally got to do it, you know?
I just want to throw in that all makes me really happy about all those things being springboard and taken off. That's amazing. Yay. Okay. Sorry, Finn, back to you.
Yeah. Thank you, folks, for all sharing these reflections. I think that a large aspect of this project and community has been the many collaborative efforts of integrating more or newer approaches of capacity building and networking and educating through prioritizing lived experiences of young people to inform and create awarenesses. I think that there have been several meaningful memories for me throughout this process of working with Restoring the Circle that linked directly to the more intimate and interpersonal experiences or conversations like this that basically fostered my senses of trust and comfort to learn and to share. I'm just really glad to be able to take the time to remember the spaces and the stories that we shared to each other a year ago or what have you. And I think that a lot can happen in a year and that people change and learn throughout different paces or experiences. And so, yeah, again, just to hear these different experiences and interpretations is really interesting. This is something that I want us to keep thinking about in terms of ourselves and our participations or growths that have been influenced from experiences such as being part of this project. My podcast production role kind of pushed me into a deeper retrospective mode of thinking throughout the year in terms of just going through the processes of watching myself on tape or listening to hours of myself talking or rambling on about things in the moment. It frankly was like a bit painful, but in that same sense, I truly do value that experience of being able to reflect on my own presentations and projections or even internalizations or anxieties or just really to like recognize the efforts and the learning processes that I've gone through. When I first joined, I felt perhaps not up to par or expertise within my own lived experiences, if that makes sense. I knew that these topics and area of work were things that I wanted to be able to truly invest myself in and to be able to give back where possible, if possible. But, you know, I really struggled to find the proper words or confidences and like trust in myself and with some guests, such as the service providers, to basically be able to really feel truly present or heard or meaningful. Being able to look back on how these things kind of affected my senses of self or my participation in the times, I think it's allowed me to acknowledge and pay closer attention to essentially myself and where I come from, my own capacities, how I'm feeling, what I need, what I know, and what I do not know. It has been a process of learning and acceptance that has offered me a new sense of patience, like practicing patience and being able to connect with other gender diverse people and advocates of various kinds has allowed me to see how other people are living and how, yeah, just how diverse, you know, the gender diverse communities are within themselves. it's really important to be able to recognize how mindfulness can look and how it truly can make a difference for people in terms of collaborating or learning or, you know, recognizing differences. RJ, I remember you were once talking or wondering of more ways that we could continue supportive approaches in terms of collaborating, teaching, and story sharing across intergenerational paths. It really meant a lot to me in terms of being able to truly reflect on these types of differences and experiences that I kind of briefly touched upon. The question on how to extend accessibility and support in learning and sharing is something that I hope we can all try to talk about more. What has been most meaningful or memorable for you throughout this collaboration of community organizing for gender diverse youth and for service providers? And, you know, what are your suggestions for improving the process of cisgender adults working with trans, two-spirit, and or gender diverse young people?
Those are really good questions. Definitely, I think a highlight for me was just like the time that we spent as like young people, like eating together and talking about like what had, like, you know, our different experiences. And I remember just feeling really connected to community, which is always like a wonderful feeling for me. And in terms of suggestions, you know, I think I would really want to emphasize the importance of recognizing how, as a service provider, especially one who is cisgender or who has other like identities that are aligned with privilege in the society, just recognizing the power dynamics that exist like between service providers and service users, especially trans and gender diverse youth, and really encouraging providers to do the work of interrogating their own biases and recognizing that they aren't perfect and that they are likely to make mistakes, and that it shouldn't be on the service users or the youth themselves to have to constantly be pushing for change or to push for self-reflection, because it's so exhausting, especially, you know, if you're in crisis or if you're just needing to figure out how to calculate whatever equation you have in your like grade 11 math class. Like, it's really not something that's useful, I would say, for someone to have to do. And I think definitely, like, as service providers, like, I think there's often this trap where we believe that we are the experts, you know, because we've been to school for so many years or have been in the field for so many years that like we know everything. And especially as it relates to the relationship between adults and young people, it's often very much like we, the adults, know what's best for you. And, you know, your perspectives or opinion don't matter or aren't as important as ours. That's where we get into so much trouble, especially when you have like these service providers who don't experience transphobia or transmisogyny or other like forms of like gender-based oppression in this like regard, and don't have the, you know, despite all their knowledge and despite all their years of school and professional experience, still don't know what it's like to be a trans or gender diverse person. And so really, yeah, I think that's one way to improve access to care, and improve like trans inclusion within these different sectors, is by the providers within these sectors taking the time to acknowledge their privilege and the ways that it impacts the relationships that they have with their service providers and how power dynamics influence people's experiences of care.
I just wanted to say, Keegan and Finn, I think those are really important points. And what I think about it too, one of the things I think about is how service providers or folks or cis folks like myself, when you're put in these positions where you're supposed to know, I think sometimes there can be this reluctance to admit that you don't know or to learn or to like do the act of learning on yourselves. And I think it's really important to understand that you both hold resources and access to resources, and you also are not an expert and you are going to fail in these processes, right? That, and so to be a little more humble or vulnerable in it, I think is sometimes hard for some service providers, but I think it's important. While at the same time, taking on ownership for educating oneself. Does that make sense?
Lots of sense, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I definitely, yeah, and I can appreciate, you know, that there's so much pressure, and especially because so many systems are dealing with like austerity and all these measures that limit people's ability to do their work well, even if they really want to and are so motivated, that there's all these like internal forces at play that limit people's ability to, yeah, to be honest if they don't know, or to be vulnerable in those ways. But without doing that, then, you know, to me, I guess, like, what's the point of doing this work if we're not going to do it in a way that's, that demonstrates vulnerability and, you know, that's humble and, yeah, and like in a way that we take accountability for. It makes lots of sense.
Yeah, and honest. And I think, so two things. One, we did the study with lawyers in Ontario around serving trans and gender diverse people. And lawyers had a hard time admitting that they felt that they were supposed to know these things around how to navigate laws that, you know, with a trans client, and they often didn't know, but did not want to admit it. But admitting that you don't know and then doing the education, I think, is really important. I think the other aspect too that I think about when you were talking is that this reluctance to do harm. And in that, though, is sometimes, and I do this myself, is I sometimes hold back a little bit too much and don't provide a little more active kind of help and support. I kind of step back when maybe I should be stepping forward, or even getting my own comfort level and like, oh, okay, I can like be sort of more of a project manager on this and get these sort of tasks done, or I can support in these ways, right? Because I think that holding back actually can leave, you know, young people feeling unsupported. So when Finn was talking about finding voice, right, and then working through being comfortable in the process of having that voice and having that platform, you know, one of the things that I think about is that I would be going forward, and I should have been more mindful that when you've lived experiences where your voice has not been centered, or it's been erased, or it's been silenced, that shifting that spotlight on can be a little daunting, I imagine. Right. And I'm sure you all have different experiences with that. So that's one thing that I kind of wish that I had learned better when we were starting this, was something I'm going to try to learn better going forward. Right. Okay. Sorry. Back to Finn and any of you who want to talk about, you know, how cisgender adults do this work.
This is just such a big, scary, heavy question. In that I feel like, on the one hand, I'm a Scorpio, so I'm very pessimistic and intense, right? So I hear this question and it leaves me with some hopelessness, in that I feel like the answers to this for cis folks are out there, and in some ways have always been out there, which is like trans, gender diverse, and two-spirit youth are asking to be treated with respect, with common decency, to be, you know, referred to with their correct name, which means their chosen name, their pronouns, not their preferred pronouns, but their pronouns. And I think that in things that cis folks can do, I think is realizing that there are already people that they know and interact with that are agender, that are not cis, and they just don't know it. And I feel like a big part of that is the people in your life that are not cis probably, you know, like don't feel comfortable to share that with you. And something that I've been doing in panels and workshops is like really emphasizing to cis practitioners that not all transgender diverse and two-spirit youth have the privilege to be their true self. And what I mean by that is like, I feel like I'm often on panels with folks that also live in major cities, metropolitan areas, live on their own, and now have a pretty good understanding of who they are and what they want, how they want other people to see them, and being able to have access to a lot of that. And within that, of course, is barriers. Like something that Keegan and I talk a lot about is like the process of being fat and navigating healthcare. And that's a separate thing. But what I'm trying to highlight here is like not all trans, two-spirit, and gender diverse and agender and non-binary folks have, you know, like shaved heads and dyed hair and undercuts and tattoos and piercings. Like, there's no trans look. There's no non-binary look. And beyond youth, like, there's lots of older folks that aren't living their truth yet. And so what that makes me think of is, like, cis practitioners need to work on their biases, like my colleagues have already mentioned, but also just, like, realizing that we look like you, that there's, like, various stages to our lives, and that just, like, really unlearning understandings of the binary and heterosexism, and understanding that unless I tell you I'm XYZ, there is absolutely no way for you to know that I'm XYZ or ABC. And I think that that's just such a hard concept for, like, cis folks to grasp when all they know is, like, pink and blue and the binary. But yeah, like, I feel like these answers are already out there, and the folks that want to know, know. The folks that want to learn, learn. And so I feel, you know, somewhat frustrated and hopeless in having these same conversations over and over. And on the one hand, I feel like trainings cannot be the be-all end-all, right? But then on the other hand, like, the current phase of this research project, so we currently have a survey that's out for trans youth, trans encompassing, like, two-spirit, agender, non-binary, gender diverse folks as well. So we have a survey out for the youth group, 14 to 24, and then we also have a survey out for service providers who work with this particular group. And in asking service providers, like, what they need in order to, you know, do their jobs better in terms of serving two-spirit, gender non-conforming, and gender diverse youth, like, what do they need? And within a, like, that question was set as please check all that apply. And we gave them 12 options, a lot of which were training, you know, advanced training to their profession, having forms changed in their office, or basic training, or training on being an advocate for young trans people. And the most popular response, the one that most folks selected, was training specific to Indigenous, trans, or two-spirit young people. And I feel like that gives me a little bit of hope. But then on the flip side, it's like doing a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 day training is, it's not enough, but it's, but then again, it's like, it's also an important start. And I guess what I'm trying to say is I just have really complicated feelings about this, and I'd love to hear, like, what the rest of you have to say about it. But I do want to highlight that, like, there's a glimmer of hope in that folks are saying that, like, this is the, like, the, this is what most folks are saying, at least in our survey. Which is still in process and is not a huge sample size, but folks are saying that that's the main, like, specific training they want. And then the second most popular answer was education specific to racialized trans young people, which also, like, gave me some hope. And then, like, the next most common responses were tied for, like, training specific to trans disabled young folks. And then again, like, advocating for trans folks, and then, like, advanced training specific to their profession. But yeah, those are some of my thoughts that I just wanted to share. And I'm curious to see what y'all have to say as well.
Great. Thanks, Pri. Does anybody else have anything to share?
Yeah, I really appreciate what you just said, Pri, because it is true that, like, this information is out there, you know, trans and gender diverse people for years and years, for eons really, have been talking about what it is we need, and, you know, publishing best practices, and, you know, all these things. So it's not new, this information necessarily. And it is demoralizing, you know, to recognize that, you know, if people don't feel personally motivated to do this work, or if they aren't being forced to by, like, the Human Rights Commission or something, that, like, it doesn't get done. And it really is frustrating. And so I really empathize with that. And I think for me, like, when I am getting, you know, bogged down with hopelessness and feeling like, what's the point of, like, you know, me, like, doing this, like, LGBT 101, because, like, these service providers are, like, not even paying attention and like won't even, you know, like won't take anything away from like this like 45 minute session that I have, except for me, like, I don't know, giving somebody a gift card because they answered a question correctly towards the end. what fills me with hope, or like what helps me keep going is recognizing that as people with lived experience, as community members, we have power, and we like not a bunch of it, obviously, otherwise like this we wouldn't even be having this podcast, but we do have capacity and can make really great and powerful changes like within our own communities, you know, outside of these systems that aren't based in these like colonial like white supremacist models that don't serve anybody really. And thinking about how, you know, us coming together even right now on this like for this conversation is like one means of building capacity and maybe, you know, giving like each of us something to maybe, we, you know, something to look forward to, or like, you know, when we all, you know, disperse, and this like having these spaces like and feeling like, oh wow, I felt really heard by what the others were saying, and that was really meaningful for me. And then hopefully being able to use that power that we build, or use that like kind of capacity we build to like build our own things and like have our own initiatives and do like work for us that's by us, that like exists outside of these frameworks that are very slow to catch up and aren't wanting to. And certainly it doesn't mean that, you know, if someone like none of us are surgeons, for instance, like, you know, so like we can't like do surgery on each other. So there's still like things that, you know, there's still lots of barriers, and, you know, like the work that we do within our communities isn't the, like, you know, can't address all the need. But at least for me, it's like been my connections with community and being able to spend time with other transgender diverse people that's like allowed me to even be here right now. And so that's kind of what comes up for me in response to what you said, Pri.
I had some memorable things from it, if I could speak on those. One memorable thing for me was like how this was one of my first public speaking type of events. And I have such severe social anxiety. I thought it was showing on stage. I was like shaking and everything. And I ended up meeting somebody during our lunch break who was one of the service providers. And she was talking to me and she's like, you know, you did really well, right? I would have liked to hear more from you. And I'm like, really? Like, really? Like, I didn't show that I was that anxious? She's like, no, I had no idea. I'm like, oh, whoa, cool. The other thing that I liked about, well, that was meaningful for me about this program and like organizing it and stuff, was we did address whiteness as it is and how it, you know, affects every single part of our lives as racialized youth. I also noted how many of the cis service providers were also white. Right? So like, it's harder for us to connect to them, in my opinion, because they don't quite understand the stuff that we're going through. And they don't understand how white supremacy is so much a part of our healthcare and other social systems and stuff. Yeah, the most important thing for like cisgender adults working with us, in my opinion, is like, when we say that we are oppressed, or when we say we are being racialized or whatever, they need to believe us. Because sometimes they're all like, well, I don't believe that. Like, that can't be a thing. And we need to understand that when we say something, we just believe it. Like, it's not that difficult. Just listen. That's all they need to do, is like, listen to us, believe us, try to understand us, you know?
I'm sorry that you have that experience, Alex. I just wanted to say with Pri, I totally, I understand. I want to say understand, but I can't understand from a lived experience. But when you say the information's out there, right? And Keegan, you echoed this, the information's out there for cisgender adults to do the work, right? Go to it. And it reminds me too, though, also of when engaging with anti-Black racism and trying to work against it, and having a lot of Black folks within that organization saying, we've already laid out the ways in which white people can be supportive. You need to go do those things, right? The same thing with the TRC reports, like the actionable items are there, right? They need to be picked up. So I hear that. And then, and Alex, you were great. All of you are great. So I think I learned later that some of you felt nervous, but I thought you were all wonderful. Okay, sorry. I'm going to shoot this back over to Finn. Those are just my comments.
I think that there's been a lot of different various types of courage and also like just incredible work that's been taking place by the young folks, which, you know, should be absolutely recognized as such an important piece to ourselves and the developments of our own practices. I'm not actually necessarily out of par within my own gender diverse experiences or abilities or needs. However, if I could go back and I could do some things differently, or I could approach my own participations differently, I do think that, you know, having these kind of conversations beforehand would have possibly made things a bit different. And I do think that I wish that I was able to maybe have more of this accepting, patient, mindful, and reflective mindset in order to be able to present or perform more sincerely and more comfortably to myself and for the people that I was sharing with. Post-conference and post-symposium, post-organizing, I really had to take time for myself and kind of just think about, you know, what were the things that made me most uncomfortable. I had to think about the times where I felt like I did not know enough, or I could not feel comfortable enough to articulate or find ways to share my insights. And especially upon sensitive or traumatic subjects, I think that I had to take a second to realize that it's almost like I was trying to avoid most of the more confrontational, direct positions that dealt with informing service providers, because for whatever reasons, I just felt like I couldn't do that. And that wasn't actually my expertise, even though, you know, I think so much differently about it now. And, you know, looking back at some of the roles that I took place in where my voice was present, such as moderating the youth panel or co-leading a workshop, the feelings of hesitation or reservation and like simply not being able to share or express my own unique self as a young non-binary person is just something that I've thought a lot about. And I think that now I've been able to kind of connect how some relationships of my own discomforting histories with some services and the relations of my own capacities, yeah, they became barriers and they did create anxieties for me in some of the roles that I was a part of in this project. That being said, being able to reflect and connect these realizations have become the grounding, influential like experiences and things that I've been able to take out of this project and still keep with me today. And that inspired me to reconnect with you folks and just to know how you're doing and what you've been up to, and kind of to ask how things could have been differently for you if they could have been, or if you've thought about any of these things. Yeah, I want to express that I'm really appreciative of all of you and all of the work that you have put into all these stages of this project. And I can only wish you were also being patient with yourselves and, you know, feeling valued for the incredible strides and work. And I guess to kind of wrap things up, I want to hear about some of the most important things that you've learned throughout some of these processes. And yeah, again, like how could things have been differently for you or for this project or for future projects? Yeah.
I think just while you were speaking, Finn, I have CPTSD. So I had like a bit of a flashback to, so the day of the conference, the day of our original event for Restoring the Circle, we had our youth panel and then we did our individual workshops. And I was facilitating a workshop about community consultations that was co-facilitated with RJ, not the same RJ on this call, but another person named RJ who also happens to be racialized and a trans youth. And within that same session, I think I'll share the bad first. So we had someone in our session that was a surgeon or a doctor, or either or, who worked at SickKids and said something really invalidating to my co-facilitator and would not shut up about it. And I had kind of put my foot down in an attempt to like moderate. And I think I was trying to be kind of like pretending to be neutral, but I was really upset. And I think that that really showed in our workshop. And I just wanted to share that like, even after a panel and even after everything that we had to say, that there was like seemingly like a white cis man doctor who thought he knew better than us about our bodies, even after like 6 hours of us screaming, like, we know our bodies best. So that's something I wanted to share. And I think that like in planning similar types of events going forward, I think it might be helpful to have like an additional moderator beyond who's facilitating. And maybe they need to be white, like to tell white people to shut up. So that's kind of like a half processed thought that I want to share. And then on the flip side, within the same session, something that was really interesting was we had so many service providers in our session that are folks that I've accessed services from in the past or ended up accessing services from like after the workshop, or people that I've spoken to on the phone before, but I've never seen. And it was really interesting just like being in a space where the power dynamics were reversed, where they were there learning from me. And I think it really helped me build like a professional relationship in a different capacity that was really interesting. But it also kind of, it pointed out to me that like, these are the people who actually care about us, you know? These are the people who actually care to hear what we as trans youth, as non-binary, gender diverse folks have to say. And that was something that like really meant a lot to me. And one of the people that came to our workshop that I believe was at the panel as well is a facilitator. And I think they identify as non-binary. They're definitely not cis, and they're Indigenous. And like, I wouldn't say that they're an elder, but they're like, they're definitely like twice as old as I am. And just after that workshop, like I've been able to build a really special, like almost like mentor-mentee type relationship with them. And I feel like similar to what Alex found in Danny at the workshop, like I was able to kind of find that in the person that I'm thinking of. And that's really special. And I think that like with all the unfortunate experiences that I've shared today, I again do want to highlight that like the people who want to learn will show up and, you know, ask questions and make an attempt to actually learn rather than challenge us in a way that's like insulting or offensive. Yeah, I think that's kind of like where I'd like to leave things.
I just wanted to say, Pri, first of all, I didn't realize that that happened in that session. So I'm really sorry that that happened. Not the good stuff, the bad stuff, the invalidating experiences. And it does highlight the importance of knowing that who's going to show up in front of you, there's going to maybe be a range too, right? Of those who cause harm and those who, yeah. And so to be really mindful of that in things going forward. So I'm sorry that you were put in that position and that that happened. So it's a really good reminder. And I am also, though, very glad, obviously, that these connections, these other connections grew, right? Sorry. Back to Finn and Finn's question. So I think Keegan wanted to chime in, if I'm remembering correctly.
I just wanted to say that in terms of lessons learned going forward, I think for me, what's coming up is, I guess I'm wondering like how to, like, you know, I understand, you know, all of us are dealing with so much, with so many different things at all times, like, you know, just like living on this planet, like requires that you are dealing with a bunch of things all the time. And I think it's really valuable and important to, you know, once, you know, an event or initiative is wrapped up to, really to show, like to demonstrate what happened and like to, you know, to kind of make it clear And disseminate that information in a variety of ways. And there's challenges to that, of course, and like different levels of capacity. But I think this is one way to really to make sure that we're pushing forward the conversations and results that we discovered or came upon. And yeah, I think it's awesome, like you know, that we are doing it, or like, you know, that we have like the podcast and the website and like kind of different, you know, eventually we'll be like providing like kind of like one page summary reports and like more in-depth like kind of data analysis. And I think that's really important, because there's just, you know, for some people listening to like an hour long podcast is just like not going to work for them, and maybe like a reading something would, but then, you know, for another person, like reading a one pager is like one page too long, you know? So these are kind of the things I am thinking about as we kind of wrap up here today.
Thanks, Keegan. Kaden, I was actually going to ask if you had thoughts. I was curious to hear from Kaden.
Yeah. I was thinking, as Finn was talking and as Pri was talking about sort of like specific things that had happened in the sessions, it's been so long since we actually had the conference that I feel like I've kind of forgotten about some of it, but it made me think about one of the things that I think the kind of most powerful thing for me from the conference, the workshop that I facilitated was with Diane Ehrensaft, who runs or works in a pediatric gender clinic in the US. And we were presenting a workshop about gender-affirming care for transgender diverse kids and youth in kind of that medical context, including work that I've done with other folks in Ottawa, where we did a survey of youth and kids and families' experiences accessing that care in Ottawa in the gender clinic that we have here. And so I was kind of presenting the results of that survey and the takeaways from that, in terms of from the folks who responded to our survey, their kind of recommended best practices and what they wanted that care to look like. And I was able to co-present that with Diane, where she was also able to speak about the model that they use in their clinic. And we were able to kind of use that, I felt like, to support the things that I was already saying and that the youth who responded to our survey were saying. And that was really cool to me, because I think that often in Ottawa, there's really only one place where folks can get that care. And so when kids or youth or folks who are our clients in that clinic are talking about issues that they've experienced or like ways that system does not work well, there's no one who's doing that work who's able to back them up or support that, because there's nowhere else where it's being done any differently here. And so being able to present that with someone who actually like works in sort of a similar clinic and does that work and could like hear the quotes from things that youth had said in the survey or the stats that we had gotten from the survey and show how that was supported in the work that they're actually doing was really cool for me, having done all that work. And I think also like I felt like it was really powerful in being able to present it to potentially other service providers who are doing that work, who are able to see both sides of that. And I think, yeah, it's pretty, I do a lot of workshops and education, and I spend a lot of time talking to service providers about like transitional healthcare for trans kids and youth. But I think it's very rare to have experiences where there's someone else who is a service provider actually working in that context, who's able to kind of back up and support all the things that we're already saying. And that was a really cool experience for me. So I think that was probably my kind of biggest takeaway.
Well, throughout this process, I found that while I learned to be at least a little bit kinder to myself and understand that I do have interesting experiences that I should be able to share, but sometimes people like us are silenced, right? And we are told we're insignificant and all of that fun stuff. But I also learned how to be more of a community member because of all the things that I got to do after the fact. It even led up to me being able to be a youth mentor for a little wee bean between the ages of 6 and 15 when I get them. And it's just been awesome for me anyways.
Finn, can I answer something that was memorable for me and things that I wish I had done differently? So, I mean, I enjoyed personally working like the planning process and all the different conversations and how honest everyone was, and that for like that very first sort of insistence that the voices that are usually erased lead, right? And really loving that. And then for me in the conference, like the most thing that I really just loved was I didn't know what you were going to say on the panel. I had no idea, right? You all wanted that space. And so I wasn't sure what to expect, and I wasn't sure what was going to sort of unfold. And I was so blown away when all of you just got up there and owned it. And it was as if you had, you know, I know some of you have different experiences with it, but it was like you all were very experienced with this and did this beautiful job. And so that's something that I remember. Things that I was really impressed with. And then the things that, you know, I wish I had done differently were this kind of the pieces that I had sort of wanted to be in place that kind of fell off a little bit. And one of them was, you know, pre-survey to service providers. And had I, and would have like talked about what they wanted to learn and where they were at. And I think had I had that snapshot, it would have been easier for us to understand that the audience in front of you is quite varied, I think, in some ways, not in terms of being racialized. That's the other thing. We need to do more recruitment for having racialized service providers on board. Because I know that that was also a bit a daunting kind of experience of being racialized and then having an audience of white service providers who hold power and different things in front of you. But it would have given me a snapshot of like what to expect and how to mold things in different ways. Because one of the things that I got back was that some of the service providers felt that they wanted in more in-depth training, more specific training, more. So that would have been good. And then I guess I am feeling that I wish we had this kind of conversation, or I had this kind of understanding, or I led these things or probed these things in terms of where you were at going into it and how I provide support, including what does it feel like to now have the platform and making sure that there is a moderator, somebody present in the room that can shut down or speak to harmful conversations. So I really wish that had happened. Back to you, Finn.
I think as we end our conversation today, I guess I just want listeners and each other to consider what allyship looks like or what it can look like for gender diverse youth. And, you know, what does community mean to you? How have you found ways to foster your needs within communities? And I guess just to be mindful and keep thinking about different ways of collaboration and intergenerational networking that have been, you know, beneficial for you throughout these types of processes. If no one else has anything they want to share, I think that, yeah, we can check out. And I thank you all. And thanks for those of you taking the time to hear our voices and to hear about the processes of organizing this project, Restoring the Circle. I wish you all well. And yeah, if anyone wants to add anything else before we check out, then you are welcome to do that.
Just thanks for having me here. And thank you all for all of your contributions and efforts. And I really appreciate it, having the opportunity to do this work with y'all. And I hope you have a good day.
I can speak on community as for about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, my disability started and I felt quite lost and I didn't have any places or, you know, I couldn't take up much space anywhere. And through the time of just going to medical appointments after medical appointments, feeling like an old person, I found out how much community really meant to me this year. And through the conference, I got to meet so many people from the LGBTQ community and plus. Community is so important for people. We're social creatures. It's wonderful to be able to have, you know, connections with people who can understand you or at least are trying to understand you. The ways that I found to foster my needs of communities was through the, for example, Trans Youth Mentorship Program. I also was a part of PACT, which is a sewing program where we sew stuff for shelters and donate them later. Yeah, I've been able to do so much because of this. And I just wanted to say thank you for everyone working on it. You know, it was a good time as a whole.
Wow, Alex, you're doing amazing stuff. That's awesome. Pri or Kaden, did you have anything you wanted, any closing thoughts?
I think that's about everything that I had to add. But yeah, definitely it was really awesome working with all of you. And also I want to say thanks to Finn for all of your work on the podcast and all of the episodes that have happened. I know it's been a ton of work, and all the ones that I've heard sound really awesome, and I'm really excited to hear the complete set. So thanks for working on that, and also for like organizing this to be able to bring folks back together to have these conversations. Yeah, I think it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Finn's amazing. Finn's an amazing job.
Yeah, I also just want to echo what everyone said in terms of Finn, your labor on producing the podcast. You've done an amazing job, and I really appreciate your well thought out questions and just facilitating the process for all of us, and also creating an opportunity for us again to have these conversations as a team, and just like being able to connect during the pandemic and have a conversation with y'all, because I feel an affinity to y'all and I really miss you. And yeah, this has been really nice. So thank you to Finn for making that possible. And I also want to thank everyone for just holding space for a lot of, I guess, like the more negative things that I had to share and wanted to share today. And also for just sharing in the joy of our community and just like the more positive things that I had to share as well. So thank you.
Thanks, Pri. Mm-hmm. I wanted to thank Finn as well. Finn had to sort of take this on as I stepped away for a few months from work, basically. And so Finn has sort of taken this on so well, but in a way that was kind of unfair, right? In terms of not having the constant kind of connection and support. And so I really appreciate Finn working through that and being honest about how that process has been. And then being so authentic and thoughtful and mindful and careful with all of this. It's been really, really wonderful. And that's my experience with all of you. And so I just wanted to say that I am very grateful for all the work that you all did. And I probably should say it more, but giving of you in that process, right? And how important that is. So thank you all for all the work, all the amazing stuff you're doing. I'm in awe, and I feel lucky to be part of it. And I do hope that you will also be honest when things are not okay, as I stumble through things, not intentionally and not meaning to, but yeah. So thanks, everybody. And Finn, you all rock. Okay, that's all. Finn?
Yeah, that sounds really nice to hear. And that is all for me too. And yeah, I think that we will part here.